Right now, though, from the Lowdown Low Tide, I'd like to welcome Mr. Alan Mitchell. And Alan, we've been talking about Jesse Puljujärvi, where he fits in this lineup next year, if at all. How do you see his summer and potentially fall shaping up for this young man next year?
Honestly, I it gives me no pleasure saying this, but I think he, unless there's a change in the weather, I think he may be in another city, another NHL city. It sounded to me like at the around the deadline, somewhere in there, that everybody had sort of mutually agreed that agent and player might, you know, find a better landing spot. And once you get there, and look, maybe Ken Holland can come in and Dave Tippett and reassess and kumbaya and all that. But it sounded like there was a situation where there was a point of no return. And once you get there, even though his value isn't high, I think you probably, for player and team, it might be better to move on.
So for the Oilers, what are they losing with this young guy?
Well, a huge potential. I don't think anybody thinks he's, you know, going to deliver on the number four overall initial promise. But this is a, you know, just based on his size and how he could skate before his hip issues, he should be able to be a reasonable third-line guy with 15-goal potential. That's not a number four overall pick, but it's a guy who can help you. And you know, not getting that out of him. Like, if you draft a guy at number four and he ends up being, you know, Brett Connolly, well, you know, damn it. You wanted more than that, but at least he's Brett Connolly. Right now, the Oilers, based on their mishandling of him, or the previous regime's mishandling of him, really have a guy who, you know, the new coach might go to the general manager and say, look, I can't have him on my team. He can't help me.
Would you, if you were in charge, would you ride it out with him knowing that he probably isn't the best right winger that you have, even top three or top four, and put him in position, let him ride it out, even though they don't really have a third line center here on this team?
Well, the problem is, if we go back to when Ryan Strome was a center, they seemed to be developing a little bit of rapport. I think it was Jujhar Khara on that line, and they were doing some reasonable things. And there was a couple of times that he moved up to Nuge's line, and there was some traction. So, yeah, you can do that. And you know, ideally, I think for the Oilers, if you're using every asset to the optimal, then, yeah, that's how you proceed. The problem is, if your right wing is, let's say Tippett sits down here next week and he goes, okay, Gagne, and I like Cassian a lot, and let's bring in, you know, for lack of a better phrase, another winger, let's bring in Chase on. So you've got those three guys, but I still need another scorer for the top line. Well, that's not Puljujärvi, right? So what does Puljujärvi do? What role can he fill now for Dave Tippett in the fall? Is he a checking winger? Is he a scoring winger? You know, when Todd McClellan talked about him, there was a lot of misunderstanding about where he was supposed to be on the ice. I saw live at least four or five times where Connor McDavid would turn around with the puck and Puljujärvi would be facing him, right? Like, that's not where he's supposed to be. And there seemed to be a communication issue with the player and a lot of frustration on both sides. So if you can start anew, fine. If you can find him a centerman, that's great too. But that's a lot of work for one player when you're trying to get 23 of them introduced to the new coach.
We've got Alan Mitchell on the line from the Lowdown with Low Tide. You can hear him every day here on the station from 10 till 12. And Low Tide, you know, just maybe explain this one to me. The LA Kings are one of the older teams in the league. They do have a new coach in Tom McClellan. Why would they be interested in acquiring Patrick Marleau, who has 1 year left in his contract? Been a great player for a long time, but if he was 22, I'd be like, oh, yeah, but what is he? He's got to be 47 or something. Isn't it time to maybe try to get younger?
Well, he was in the league for a decade before you got there.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Here's what I can almost guarantee it, because LA is not run by stupid people. So if this trade is going to happen, it's going to be Marleau and something really good, like, I mean, really good, for nothing. You know, like you're,
right.
you basically are giving up Kapanen or you know, something of extreme value to Los Angeles, because all they're doing is taking on a guy they can't afford and letting him live in L.A. until his contract is done. And in exchange for that, they're going to want a lot. They're going to want a good young roster player under control, and by good, I mean very good.
Yeah, so they're getting a pretty sweet cookie along with that liver they have to eat.
Dessert is going to be excellent. Yes, that's exactly right.
And then as far as the, you look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'm trying to understand what they're doing. So Zaitsev wants out. Okay, you know, no problem. We're gonna move him out. But Gardner, I don't know if they want him to leave, but he's probably going to want to leave. You know, a bit of a rough place to play for him. And then they still need another D-man. So how are they going to bring in all these D-men? Is there internal replacement for the Maple Leafs, or is it external through for the moves and perhaps trades?
Well, this is the problem that they have, and it's a big one. The issue that Toronto has is, as you say, it's not just, you know, one guy. Now it's two guys, and they weren't overly effective before that. Like, one of their problems was defense. They have, if they get rid of Zaitsev, I think they have one right-handed defenseman left. They've got a couple of first-round picks who are bubbling under, but neither of them, Liljegren and the other young man, Sandin, I don't think they're ready. So either you're going to trade Zaitsev and get back a replacement Zaitsev, maybe at less cap or whatever, or you're going to go young. And as you know, like, everybody loves, you know, the idea of young defensemen, but once they arrive in the NHL and they start making mistakes, then people get frustrated by them. Playing defense is really hard in the NHL, and Sandin isn't 20, and I don't think Liljegren's more than 20 or 21. Those guys are too young. They don't. There's nothing. You know, Dermott's a good young player, but I think he's third pair, right? Muzzin is on the team. He's good. Certainly, Riley is an excellent defenseman. But you know, I would say their left side is established, but their right side, you know, they got a little bit of trouble there. I wonder if they're going to target. There was talk of it around the deadline. I wonder if Adam Larson might be a target for Toronto.
And what would be the reasonable return for you if you were the GM of the Mighty Oilers?
For Adam Larson?
Yes.
Well, you'd need one of those young. You'd need Kapanen, and you probably would need the thing about it is, once you trade Larson, then you've got your trouble on defense, right? As much as people want to bitch and moan about Adam Larson, he played top pair. He is right-handed. Chris Russell isn't. You'd need Kapanen, I think, for sure, and that's a great young player. And then you probably would have to go out and get another right-handed defenseman right away by moving something else.
You know what? It's low tide. It's always the same. It's like there. You know, sometimes you have a problem at home. Maybe there's like I used to have those little baby pools for my kids. You know, and they'd poke a hole in the one side. I'd just get that patched up, and then they'd kick a hole in the other side. So I have to go and patch that up with some duct tape, and then there'd be another hole. Like, it just the problem. And this is why I'm preaching patience for the Oilers fan base, but no one wants to talk about it, is that, you know, you just move things around, but you're not really solving problems. You're creating new problems. So you're solving a problem, but you're not reducing the number of problems you have. So what I'm saying, what my vision is to ride this out, maybe make a couple smaller moves, but see what your young D-man look like. What does Bouchard look like? If he's ready mid-season, then by all means, you go in and move a guy. But to say, well, we got to make this move. Oh, hold on. We moved the guy. We've got a better forward, but now we don't have the D, or we moved the D like we did to get Hall, and all these problems. Like, there's got to be a more rational approach, and that's what I hope Ken Holland brings to this group.
You know, it reminds me, when you were talking, it reminds me of when I was a kid, my grandma and grandpa and my dad would be watching the Leafs. And if Tim Horton was on the ice, or Bob Bonn, or Larry Hillman, or any of those old-timey, really good defensemen, they were happy. But God forbid if Jim McKenney or any of the young guys would be up, because it would drive them crazy. And there's some truth in that, because, you know, I really like Caleb Jones, as a for instance. But you don't trade Darnell Nurse to make room for Caleb Jones. And that's the Sekera now, if the Oilers go through this season and Sekera plays well and Jones really pushes his way into the lineup, then maybe you have to make a decision. But by that time, Jones will have almost 100 games in the NHL, and you don't move your number one or your number two left-handed defenseman. You probably move your number three guy, which at that time would probably be Sekera. The The problem for the Oilers is, you know, remember when they got Justin Schultz, they put him right out of the top pair. And then when Pittsburgh got Justin Schultz, they didn't even play him for about 2 weeks, and then they put him on the third pair. And that's pretty much, I believe, where he is now.
Yeah, and that's the hard part. All these decisions, it's just unbelievable. Now, one last thing here for you, Low Tide, from the Lowdown with Low Tide every day on 10 to 12 here on the station. Your thoughts on the removal of, the parting of ways of Viveros and Yanni from the Oilers coaching staff?
Well, I feel badly for both guys because it's not fun, I'm sure. Viveros, from what we were told he could do coming in, I don't know if he ever got a chance, honestly. It feels like he sort of was hired to do a job he never got to do, right? And that's unfair, and it's unfortunate, but it happens. Yanni had a great reputation coming in. He has a great reputation coming out. It just didn't work here this year. The penalty kill has been bad for so long, and I think it's personnel. Here's the problem. You know, I think Kara might be a good penalty killer. I think Cassian is improving as a penalty killer. Leon looks like he can do okay. McDavid, I don't think they used him a minute a game, but he looks like he'd be okay. But the Oilers don't have, like, how many forwards do you need on a penalty kill rotation? Six? So they got so many guys who can't penalty kill for whatever reason. It sort of really reduces the number of people that you can use and use well. And I think one of the things that Holland and Tippett will do is I think the third and fourth line are going to have a hell of a lot more penalty killers, guys who can penalty kill and have a reputation for penalty killing, than they've had in the last several years.
We'll leave it right there. Have yourself a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Strutty, you're the man, and I can't believe that Gregor left you on a Friday. And I want to just mention that when you started this feature, this particular segment, you said Craig Button is coming up later on.
Yeah, I got a stutter. Not only the lisp, I also have a stutter coming in, bud. So things are really going south in my world as far as speaking.
Yeah, it's like your hockey career all over again.
I just need a 4-minute shift, and it'll be the exact same.
Strutty, you're the man. Thanks, buddy.